This is Jerry Bingham, host of Hush Loudly on WGN Plus.
If I can build or help build community within organizations and within different populations to help learn about themselves and others, then I'm doing my part to make the world a better place.
Hi, I'm Grant Harris, founder and president of GTH Consulting, certified diversity executive, three-time autistic published author, and introvert. You're listening to Hush Loudly on WGN.
Hi, thank you for joining us at Hush Loudly. This is Jerry Bingham, your host, with another amazing guest. I'm going to start off by telling you a little bit about Grant Harris. Grant is the founder and president of GTH Consulting, LLC, a minority and disability-owned management consulting firm offering customized organizational development, human capital, and cultural transformation service to public and private clients. Grant is a certified diversity executive, three-time published autistic author, organizational culture specialist, keynote speaker, and corporate board member. What do you not do, Grant? His work helps individuals and institutions move from compliance to community by harnessing the business value of neurodiversity in the workplace from the boardroom to the mailroom. His experience spans the federal government, K-12, and higher education, global corporations, and small nonprofits, reflecting his comprehensive and adaptable approach to various organizational needs. Mr. Harris is a planner, strategist, facilitator, and skilled communicator focusing on the intent and impact of inclusive principles in workplace practices. His ability to guide organizations through small and large organizational transitions has made him a sought-after consultant for strategic planning and implementation of short to long-range human capital goals in both public and private sectors. Grant's passion for diversity and inclusion is more than professional, it is personal. As an autistic person who once memorized the flag of every country in the world by sight and has navigated both the corporate ranks and entrepreneurship as a nonlinear thinker, he recognizes the power of neuroinclusion in the workplace and the importance of equipping organizations with the tools to overcome obstacles and barriers to achieving inclusive excellence. That is so powerful. His journey is a testament to the unifying force of neurodiversity, positively impacting both human and financial capital, and ultimately creating a stronger bottom line for business. Grant holds a BA in psychology from the Virginia Military Institute, an MBA in organizational psychology and development from the American Intercontinental University, and a postmaster's certificate in educational leadership and administration from George Washington University. He is a certified diversity executive by the Institute of Diversity Certification, diversity management certified by the Management and Strategy Institute, and Pixel 360 Leadership Assessment certified by Pixel Leadership Group. Grant, welcome to Hush Loudly.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the introduction and the opportunity to be here. It's a pleasure.
We're happy that you're here. And my first question that I ask all guests is, are you an introvert or do you have a preference for introversion?
That's a good question. I have long personally identified as an introvert. Anyone who knows me personally or has spent any significant time around me knows that not only do I prefer introversion, but that's just how I'm built. But however, while I have known these things for the majority of my adult life, I only began speaking about my personal introversion in the last couple of months. And that came on the heels of my introduction to you, the expansion of my network when it comes to Black people who also identify as introverts. So this was new to me. Speaking about it publicly and outwardly was new to me up until a couple months back. And since then, I have been speaking about it ever since. I like to call myself an onion without the snow. There's multiple layers to who I am, and I'm just scratching the surface of my introverted layer from a public perspective.
I love that. You know, it's like, you know, you're you. So you don't necessarily need to associate with a label, but probably is the more you heard about it and see this community building, especially of Black introverts and just introverts in general, that you were able to identify that because you already knew you were you. And like you said, your friends and family, everyone knows how you are. And so that's very cool. And thank you for joining our community and being another spokesperson talking about how amazing we are. I want to get into looking at your background, I see that you were diagnosed with autism later in life. I read that. And you speak to organizations about neurodiversity. So can you tell us all about that? When were you diagnosed and how did it feel to you? Because I feel like it was a stigma years ago. I don't feel like it's the same now because I feel like the smartest, most brilliant people I know are autistic. They're ADHD. And they're neurodivergent in some kind of way. It just seems like that. So tell me, when did you find out and tell us your story with that?
Well, I appreciate your positive sentiment about feeling that it is not as stigmatized as it may have been in the past. And while that's true because society has grown and matured, it's also not true because there is plenty of stigma to go around. Mm-hmm. There is always stigma, prejudice, and bias against people who not only look but also think and act differently. Mm-hmm. So while there's been progress, Jerry, the fight and the journey is certainly not over.
We're not there yet.
But my journey, first and foremost, if your listeners are not familiar, most people routinely, traditionally, are diagnosed between the ages of 3 and 6 in America. I was diagnosed at 38. So that's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah.
So I went most of my life doing what this thing called masking, which is a technical term for basically putting on a psychological, emotional, and sometimes physical persona to fit into society in different instances of life. Learning what society deems as good and versus bad and trying to fit into that and other people not knowing that outwardly. So I spent a lot of my years doing that, and a lot of that was subconscious because I was not aware of my autistic traits until I was later in life. I actually taught autistic kids when I worked in K-12 education. So I taught autistic kids, and that was before I knew I was autistic, but that probably led to some of my understanding of those kids at the time, some of my connection to those kids at the time, past just being an educator. So I came late in life, and what you see now, certainly with the onset of social media, certainly with the political scene, certainly with the medical scene, so it seems like that more people are diagnosed and that there's some type of explosion in diagnoses, and that's not necessarily the case. There's some fallacy to that because neurodivergent people have always been around since the beginning of time. Now that there are more tools, there's more focus, there's more conversation, it seems like, oh, there's more diagnosis. I won't get on my soapbox with that conversation today, but that's how I came to my diagnosis. I was at the age of 38. I think my wife, she was a catalyst to my diagnosis, and she happens to be ADHD, and she's known for a long time, and she happens to be medicated, so she was already on the neurodivergent train before I knew that I was on that train.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when it happened for me. And ever since then, I have been advocating for neurodiversity in general, autistic people specifically, Black autistic people, people who are late diagnosed, all of those different layers that I mentioned before, because all of those things have different connotations. They have different aspects to them. And people deal with them in different ways.
Wow. You know, I probably should have allowed you to say or ask you to give for those who don't understand, because we have a wide listening audience. Do you have a definition or the way you like to talk about autism, also neurodiversity? Can you give us a little of that?
So there are two ways to look at it. There is the medical way, which most people are familiar with, and there is a strength-based way. So medical-based versus strength-based. And medical-based is all based on disorder. Disease, disorder,
dysfunction. And those are the root words when you get dis, the root, the Greek lineage is dis, dysfunction, disorder, dis-ease. So autism spectrum disorder, according to the medical field, is a neurodevelopmental condition, which for some people, it is extremely difficult from a social and a communicative and a behavioral standpoint, that they do not pick up on social cues, they communicate differently, and they behave differently than the quote-unquote traditional or neurotypical brain. So let me baseline that, I disagree with the difference between neurotypical and neurodivergent. There is no typical. We all have a brain, and that's the only typical thing about that brain, is that we all have one. The way that they operate in the typical aspect is based on the neuromajority, or the people who believe and feel that they are traditionally the standard. And that standard, anything left or right of that standard, happens to be divergent, diverging from the center. And that's where we get the term neurodivergent. And again, this is synthesizing a lot of information in a short period of time. But that's the difference. So when you have autistic traits, there are challenges and obstacles from a social and a communication and a behavioral aspect that you don't necessarily see in people who are non-autistic.
Thank you for that. I don't think I've heard that, all that, the detail that you just gave. Thank you. That's very helpful to me and to our listeners. I wanted to ask you, you've had so much success in your career. It's very obvious. And you seem to be passionate about these topics, as I see you talking about them on LinkedIn. I want to know, how have your attributes worked for you professionally and personally, if you want to? So your combo, your secret sauce, and when did you realize that they were attributes? You know, we all have this superpower in us, but sometimes we don't realize it right away.
Well, good question. And I know that we so far have been talking about neurodivergence and autism, and this conversation is focused on introversion.
And we can talk about all three, because I feel like you, if you have all three, those are three superpowers, sir. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. My combination, the way that I see it, a combination of my characteristics and my traits allow me to be observant, because I observe first. I have two ears and one mouth, like I like to tell my kids. So I like to listen first, then speak. When I do speak, I attempt to be extremely direct and clear and concise and consistent in my communication, so that people understand what I'm saying, because it's hard enough to read between the lines, so to speak. Things like, I have a high ability to synthesize vast amounts of information quickly, which is how I taught myself how to speed read. I answer Jeopardy questions, or the Jeopardy answer. I answer before Alex used to be Alex, but Ken Jennings now, the host, before he finishes reading the answer, I'm like answering, because my brain moves faster than most people speak. When I listen to video, like a YouTube video, I fast forward the playback, because again, my brain is synthesizing that information so quickly, which is a blessing and a curse. It's great that I can synthesize all that information, but then I need to store it, which leads to memory. And I do have the ability to memorize things that I have a high interest in, which happens to be flags, because I memorized over 200 flags in less than 30 days because I felt like it, because I had an interest in that thing.
That is amazing.
So those types of things, the ability to synthesize vast amounts of information, to hold on to information that is important to me and the things that I do, the ability to communicate clearly, concisely, and consistently, I believe those types of things have afforded me, quote-unquote, success in my career and in life.
Clearly. Now, about this amazing brain you have, when did you realize that it was different and that you were able to synthesize information so much more quickly? Like, let's say with Alex Trebek on Jeopardy. Did you realize that that was something cool, or did you just think, oh, everybody's like this?
Neither. I definitely knew that not everybody was like that. But I also didn't look at myself as special and, oh, hey, look at what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Funny story, my sister-in-law, matter of fact, at my wife's and I's wedding,
she was telling a story, and she's like, this guy, he came over to the house, and she was talking about how I dressed, and I like to dress a certain way and all that. And she was like, he was answering all the Jeopardy questions. And so at that point, and that's been a decade ago, that was like one time in life where it was publicly brought to attention that these things that I was doing regularly anyway. But I never looked at it as cool. I didn't look at myself as different and looking at other people and wondering why they couldn't do these things. That was on the negative aspect, meaning for all of my positive traits, they come with negatives as well. Not everybody likes direct communication. It can come across as mean and short and rude. Not everybody understands. Those positive things also have negative attributes. I choose to look at them positively, but in the workplace and in life, they're not always taken as things are given. So if I'm asked a yes or no question, I usually answer yes or no. But most people, at least in my realm, want more context and why I'm saying yes or why I'm saying no or more behind the story. And I'd rather use three words than five words and seven to get the same point across. So while there are positive attributes to my characteristics, there are also drawbacks that need to be mitigated.
And that's an introvert thing where many of us are characterized or seen or summed up as mean or not engaged or not a team player when we speak, when we have something to say. So that's a society thing. Our society, of course, supports the loudest and the one that talks the most. And for those of us that don't fall into that, they're kind of confused. Like, why isn't she saying anything more? Why isn't he adding to that? We say what we have to say, and then we're done. We're ready to move on to the next thing. So that is something that many of us introverts experience. I want to ask you, what drives you? You're very passionate about this, but what really drives you to be out and be the person that you are, this voice that I see on LinkedIn?
Didn't really have a voice before. I've been a bit of a serial entrepreneur. I've had a couple entrepreneur stints in my past in different realms. Have nothing to do with what I talk about now, but they were based on mostly external factors. Being an entrepreneur certainly is an internal factor because you have to have certain personal characteristics in order to have any success as an entrepreneur. You have to have those internal qualities and traits, but the work that I was doing wasn't about people intrinsically, internally. It was about the external. This work is personal because it's my makeup. It's how God made me. It's my framework. It's my inner being. And if I can build or help build community within organizations and within different populations to help learn about themselves and others, then I'm doing my part to make the world a better place. My previous pursuits weren't necessarily making the world a better place. They made individuals feel better about themselves, but that wasn't directly related to building community. It wasn't directly related to who I was as a person internally. But this work is certainly directly related to those things, which I believe are more important than others.
Yes, love that. And thank you for doing that. What do you do when you come into a company? So if I wanted to hire you because I'm not sure, I feel like I need to do something, I need to have some equity, I see some differences in our team, what do you do? What's the first step?
Well, the first step is always a conversation and has to start with a mindset. This work, any good work, is not broken overnight and it isn't fixed overnight. And it isn't fixed by just applying band-aids and bandages. It isn't fixed just by applying tools. It's fixed from the inside out. It didn't break from the outside in. It broke from the inside out. And that's how these things get quote-unquote fixed or how they get better. I focus on the mindset. I have a framework called the RACE framework, R-A-C-E, which stands for Recognize, Acknowledge, Cultivate, and Engage. And it's a cyclical framework that I work with leaders from, but it starts with them looking at themselves and self-reflection and looking at their core values and their core principles to understand who and where they are on their personal journey and then where the organization is on its collective journey. That's where it starts.
I don't come in and say, hey, well, you know, let me nail something over here, let me screw something over here, and put it together like Frankenstein, and then all of a sudden something is better. Because that doesn't make the internal people, and it doesn't make the internal culture any better. It's a house of cards, and it's going to fall in on itself later on.
Wow.
So it starts with that process. Yes, there are tools, there are frameworks which get applied through that process, but it starts with an inventory at the leadership level of who they are, what the core principles and the core values are. You go through acknowledging your intent and your impact. What's the intent from an action within the organization? What's the impact of that action internally on the people who are most impacted versus the ones who are least impacted? And then we extrapolate that to the external customer. What's your intent and what's your impact? What did you intend to do, but what actually really happened? And then we cultivate, which is the C, cultivate education, professional development, learning, give you an opportunity to learn something different in a different way than what you thought you knew before. And last but not least is engage with the E, and that's where the action starts. All of the theory, all of the assessment, all of the self-reflection is only part of the puzzle. You cannot have self-reflection, theory, and frameworks without action at the end of the day. I'm a practitioner, not a researcher. So at the end of the day, it's about doing things to make progress to get 1% better, which anyone who knows me knows that that's my daily motto is get 1% better.
Yeah.
So engage is very important. And then that repeats on a cycle. Always looking at who are we, what are our principles, what are our values, what's the intent, what's the impact, what are we learning about this culture internally and the culture externally, and how are we engaging with all of that? And that goes top to bottom. It starts with leadership because they make the decisions on who they work with, et cetera. But like I say, from the boardroom to the mailroom, it affects the most seasoned CEO all the way to the greenest intern.
Yes. And it starts with you. It starts with the person. You know, I was sitting here shaking my head, which you can't see. You got to figure out who you are before you can figure out where you're going, you know, and that is for the company. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like an amazing framework. I wanted to ask, just we're going to find out how to be in touch with you. But before that, do you have any advice? You know, you've always been an introverted type person, but might you have any advice? Even we talked about how we may be expected to speak more when the answer is yes or no. Any advice for the introverts that might be listening that we didn't already cover?
Yeah, I like to tell my kids and other people, you know, sometimes in life you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. I personally think that is a good thing, to push yourself outside of your comfort zone every once in a while. Unless and until you step out of that comfort zone and you are somehow being disrespected, abused, used, then you should stop and you should set those boundaries. But I do believe that people should challenge themselves, and introverts are no different. We should challenge ourselves to meet other people halfway. And I say halfway, the real expectation is for people to meet the other person where they want to be. And that's not the case. Mm-hmm. But for example, if you're going to answer the yes or no question, you answer yes or no, and you could try to give a one sentence explanation. If you are quiet in the meeting, quiet meaning you haven't spoken, you could do one of two things. You could give your input before the meeting, or you could request to give your input after the meeting, so that whoever is leading and whoever is participating understands that while you may not be saying something in that moment or in that meeting physically, you are still contributing to the whole before or after. If you prefer camera choice, like I do, I prefer not to be on camera more often than not, then come off camera while you are speaking only, and then go back off, recalibrate, reset yourself, turn off the ring light. That's what I do. So I'm only on if and when I'm speaking and presenting, and that way I'm still meeting people halfway and I'm not on the entire time just because there's a camera on policy. So these kind of things you could weave in as an individual. That's from the individual perspective. From the leader perspective, the organizational leader, the CEO, the hiring manager, the chief human resources officer, you should be looking at comprehensive opportunities and ways for people to contribute that are outside the norm. Meaning, we've done it this way. Most people, we do a brainstorming session and everybody gets on the whiteboard and they're throwing up on the whiteboard and they're doing the post-it notes in real time. Okay, that is certainly not the way that I prefer to work. I prefer to think before, after these kind of things. You as a leader could do multiple things. At least communicate to say, we understand this is how we do this traditionally. But if you have any other feedback or input that you would like to give at any other time, before or after, that gives people the understanding that they don't have to do it all right here, right now, in front of everybody else 100%. They could do a little bit before, give some input, maybe give some while they're in, maybe think about it afterwards and give some afterwards. So opening up the channels and opening up the different ways for people to communicate is important if you are a leader.
Yes, yes. And that's some inclusive leadership. We've talked about on this show the benefit of giving people the time to process. And part of that is giving them the information in advance or what is asked of them so they can be prepared. And also talked about how when you may have nothing to say in that conference room and your ideas may come later, like that happens for me and a lot of other introverts, that you follow up with an email or drop by an office and be like, here, look, here's what I came up with. Here's where I think we should go. That has certainly worked for me in my career. So thank you. The camera thing, I hadn't heard that. I love it. So thank you for that piece of advice that we haven't heard on this show yet. So I am going to see you in Black Introvert Week. I'm going to see you in London. So our friend Richard Etienne, who is the founder of Black Introvert Week UK, I am the founder of Black Introvert Week here. You are on a panel of guests to speak there October 30th, and I will see you there. I'm excited about that. Before we exit, if you want to talk about Black Introvert Week, what you're contributing there in London, and that's our friend Richard Etienne, and then also, how can people follow you, get all the good stuff that you share, be a part of your network?
Yes, Richard is a great person. He was my introduction to you. Again, I had no idea that there was a Black Introvert Week here or across the pond. So I was very excited to hear that.
Yes.
Yes. Be part of a 4-person panel. I'm the only American on the panel, which I am honored to be representing the U.S. On this side of the pond. So that conversation should be great. Very much looking forward to meeting you personally and directly. Looking forward to the juxtaposition between introverts in the U.K. and here in America. Looking forward to learning how that's displayed for those folks on the panel. And I'm the only man on the panel. Well, Richard will be there, but he's hosting.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see that the contrast and differences between men and women, or those who identify as men and women. So very much looking forward to that. You can find me very easily in one place. I am only on LinkedIn. I can only handle one social media platform at a time. You can find me at GrantHarris555. There are a few Grant Harrises out there, but I am the only one that talks about what I talk about. And five is my favorite number. So awesome. GrantHarris555 on LinkedIn. And my website is compliancetocommunity.com. All words, compliancetocommunity.com. But yeah, you can find my writings, my speaking, my bio, my link tree. All on my LinkedIn page, GrantHarris555.
Thank you, Grant. This has been an amazing interview. So looking forward to meeting you. And thank you for gracing us with your presence and your knowledge today here on Hush Loudly.
Excellent, Jerry. I appreciate it. Appreciate you. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Enjoying Hush Loudly? Please subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to us. Did you know Hush Loudly has t-shirts? Yep, show the world you're an introvert without saying a word. We also have t-shirts for the extroverts in our lives who need us. Go to hushloudly.com/shop.